As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. This podcast today is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. So get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. Arpan Basu, on the line with me today. How are you, my friend?
Doing well, Marc-Antoine. The Montreal Canadiens are finally back home. They're going to be home for a long time. Yeah. Yet another bizarre aspect of this season, but they did hit the halfway point the other night in Minnesota with a what seems to be a relatively frequent occurrence in Minnesota where they get blown out by the Minnesota Wild. It's I don't know why I have it in my head, but it just seems like that game we had seen that before, but it's not only because we've seen it multiple times this season, but I feel in that building. The Canadiens rarely do very well. But anyhow, it is the midpoint of the season. I know it feels like the season's been going on forever, but is actually the only the midpoint. So today, Marc-Antoine and I are going to, I guess, you know, to kind of piggyback on our colleague Julian McKenzie's weekly column at The Athletic, do a little plus minus on the Canadiens' midway point. And we thought we would start with some positives because there aren't many. So this section, we'll probably get
through
this section.
Let's get them out of the way.
Yeah, let's just get them. But let's start with something positive because I think it's true that we can, it's easy to harp on the negative because everything is so negative. And our job, Marc-Antoine and I, is to evaluate and report on and commentate on what is happening. And what has been happening this season has been overwhelmingly negative. So, but there have been some positives that have slipped through the cracks here and there. And we thought we would get into some of them today before getting on to some of the bigger disappointments. Because if we went through all the negatives, this show would be 4 hours long. And I don't think anyone's interested in that. So we will go through some of our positives and then go through some of our top negatives over the course of this half season that has felt like three seasons so far. So, I think I'll get it started.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I've enjoyed, and I think that actually Jeff Gorton has enjoyed, and he actually brought that up when at Ken Hughes' introductory press conference is just how many players he's had a chance to see. He's basically seen very close to every single player with an NHL contract who is in the pros. He has seen play for the Canadiens, almost. I mean, the only one he hasn't, I think, is Xavier Ouellette. Is that, am I wrong? Because he saw Jean-Sébastien Day.
Yeah. So
did Day get into a game? Oh, God, my brain is foggy. But
no, he did not. He was called up
to practice. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are the two guys. He has not seen yet.
There is plus a couple of injured players that are returning to action with the Laval Rocket, Josh Brook and Joel Teasdale.
But right. plus the junior players as well. So
yeah. But I mean, it's an extensive list. I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
And so from Jeff Gorton's point of view, and it was great how he put it. You know, he kind of put it like it's been both a good and a bad thing. It's good from an evaluation standpoint, but obviously it's bad because it means the sheer number of injuries and COVID cases that led to that situation is obviously not ideal. But having said that, one of the players, I mean, it's given us a chance to see some NHL potential in some players. And two of them have been obviously Michael Pezzetta and more recently Lucas Vaidemo. And, you know, I feel like these two guys are kind of following the Jake Evans school of player development, where they've gotten significant time in the AHL. Personally, well, I never once thought of Michael Pezzetta as a potential NHL player. That has changed. I thought Lucas Vaidemo's time to become a potential NHL player had passed. I don't think that anymore. So, you know, just those two guys in particular, but I think them is kind of a representation of a development path that the Canadiens would like to see happen more often in the future. What have been your thoughts on those two guys?
Yeah, well, you compare them to Jake Evans. The one thing with Jake Evans' development ever since the moment he was drafted by the Canadiens is that there's been steady development. There's been sometimes the occasional setback or slump or whatever, and going back to, you know, habits that needed to be fixed and whatnot, especially, both in Laval and in Montreal. But globally, it's been a constant development and a constant improvement on his part. I'm not sure we can say the same thing about Lucas Vaidemo, because it seemed to have stalled at some point. He seemed to have plateaued, and probably that the opportunity that he's been given because of the circumstances this season has enabled him to showcase, you know, what he could do at the NHL level, what sort of help he could provide as a 12 or 13 forward. And I think that his versatility is something that might give him a chance to continue his career with Montreal. As for Michael Pezzetta, to me, it's completely different thing. And it's a good thing that it's different, because he provides a player profile that the Canadiens have in very small quantity in the throughout the organization. So I'm with you totally, Arpin. I did not think for a minute that Michael Pezzetta was going to be an NHL player. I thought at some point he could knock at the door and play the occasional game, but having a chance to establish himself in the NHL level, even though it's in most likely in a fourth line role, I didn't see it coming, and I think that it's a proof of how a guy that sticks to his guns, works with his strengths, and shows the amount of determination that Pezzetta has shown, it can get you a long way. So I think that if you compare this guy to former Canadian players, I think that, I guess at first I thought, okay, if he plays the occasional game, I could see him becoming, you know, a flashby in the Gregory Stewart mold. You remember around 2009,
yeah,
2010?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The guy who would constantly shake his little, his energy juice after practice, like with great purpose. Always with this bottle all the time. Anyway, so it could be him. If we go a step higher, he could become a Tom Kostopoulos or a Nicolas Deslauriers. To me, that's probably as far as he could go. But you look at Nick Deslauriers, who had, you know, we didn't think much of him when he left Montreal, but he has managed to find a niche in Anaheim. So I think that for a guy like Pezzetta, even if he's going to get a beating every now and then when he chooses to drop the gloves, a la Kostopoulos, yes. I think that he can look at in Anaheim and say, well, Nick Deslauriers is a guy that figured out a way to stick in an NHL lineup. And I think that's something that if he manages to do that, if he manages to keep his determination level and his purpose level like at 100 all the time, which is what brought him here, he could provide some interesting services for this team.
Yeah, and I think the Tom the Bomb comparison is really great. You know, I mean, pretty similar size-wise, pretty similar in the sense that Tom Kostopoulos was a decent skater. He wasn't necessarily someone who hurt you in that regard, straight line at least. And if Michael Pezzetta can put together a career like Tom Kostopoulos had, Tom Kostopoulos played 630 games in the NHL. Like, he had a hell of a career and only finished playing professionally in 2018, believe it or not. He spent 5 seasons with Wilkes-Barre, the Penguins affiliate in the AHL, had some really productive years, scored 24 goals in 2017, you know, at the age of 38. So,
and he had tons of leadership. I mean, I love that guy.
He was a great guy. He was a great guy to deal with, as is Michael Pezzetta from all, you know, by all accounts, as much as we could see from Zoom and as much as we could see in the current environment. You know, and he's a guy that his teammates like and that his teammates are pulling for. And they were so happy when he scored his first goal. And so it is one of the positives. And I think it's not inconceivable that he could grow into a typical, prototypical, energy, physical guy on your fourth line who can skate. But Michael Pezzetta is not a bad skater. He's, you know, in a straight line, in a forechecking role, and in terms of getting in on the forecheck and getting pucks deep and all those things we say, that's something that he could do.
But he'll need to play on the PK at some point, because you cannot, you know, with today's game on the fourth line, you cannot play just 5-on-5
game. I think that's something that he could totally learn to do. I don't think that's out of the question. I mean,
he's done some in Laval already. So
yeah, exactly. And it's just a question of learning reads and reacting and stuff like that. And I don't think that would be outside his skill set necessarily. But that does bring us to what has been another positive this season, and it's not at the NHL level. But when you talk about how many guys have played for the Canadiens, naturally means that those guys were taken away from the Laval Rocket. You know, Jean-François Houle in his first season as head coach of the Rocket, you know, had some big shoes to fill. I think a lot of people in the fan base looked at Joel Bouchard as a future coach of the Canadiens, probably today are wondering why Joel Bouchard is not the coach of the Canadiens. I think there are reasons behind that. But JF Houle walked into those shoes and really, you know, has the Laval Rocket in a position to make the playoffs. You know, I mean, it's you know, right now they're fourth in the North Division. They're tied with Syracuse, but they have 3 games in hand with 32 points in 28 games. So they're above 500, 571 actually. So I mean, it's really they're well ahead of Syracuse.
They won 8 out of the last 10, so it's pretty good.
So I think Jean-François Houle's performance in Laval is a positive thing for this organization. And it's really, you know, further to what we were saying about having guys come through the pipeline and make their way to the Canadiens the way perhaps Pezzetta will, perhaps Vedema will. You know, it's encouraging to see to what extent Laval has remained competitive under extremely difficult circumstances. And that's such a key part. Like, listen, we wrote a number of stories on how important Joel Bouchard was to the organization because of where they are in their development curve, because of the number of prospects that are coming. All the circumstances that led us to write those things about Joel Bouchard have not changed when it comes to Jean-François. He has a big mandate, and he needs to make sure that players who arrive in Laval graduate to Montreal with greater frequency than we saw, obviously, under Sylvain Lefebvre, but for much of the Marc Bergevin time, We did not see enough players make that transition. And he's got an opportunity. You know, you mentioned Josh Brook coming back from a long-term injury. You know, I think of Josh Brook in much the same way I look at Lucas Vedamo. You know, I mean, in the sense that, not that they're similar players or anything, but I think a lot of people have kind of given up on Josh Brook. And maybe they shouldn't. You know, I mean, who knows? Who knows what turns out there? But it's, you know, watching what Jean-Francois Houllier has done with the Laval Rocket is, I think, an extremely positive aspect of what we've seen this season, because all the issues that Dominique Ducharme was dealing with, he's basically been dealing with those same issues at a lower level, but he has his team playing really excellent and really competitive hockey in the AHL.
Yeah. What I'll say on that is that at the beginning of the season, I was really scratching my head seeing how many AHL veterans had been signed to play for the Laval Rocket. And what ended up happening is you had a guy like Cam Hillis, who's a prospect for the team, not a top flight prospect, but I mean, he was drafted in the third round, who was a victim of numbers, of the numbers game, and he ended up in Trois-Rivières. I'm thinking, well, if you want to develop young players, do you really need all those AHL veterans that are taking up spots if you have to have one of your younger forwards going down to the ECHL? So I still believe that to this day, but those AHL veterans are the guys that kept the Rocket afloat during all those injuries that both the Canadians and the Rocket suffered, and all the call-ups of pretty much every healthy prospect the Canadians had, including Cam Hillis. But, you know, the likes of Kevin Roy, Danick Martel, you know, it's...
Gabriel Bourque.
Yeah, but a bunch of guys like that. Those guys, you know, kept the Rocket afloat. And I think that it was great. And I don't want to diminish in any way what JF Hull did, because you're right. I think that he's steering a good ship right now. But I think that's where those guys that were there to provide stability and experience at the AHL level, it really paid off in a way that you would not hope that it would happen that way, but that's how it turned out. And now, as guys come back from injuries, from COVID bouts, you'll have a healthier lineup in Laval, and they're really poised, I think, to have a second half of the season that would position them well. So I think that's as good as it's been in the first half. You know, JF Hull is probably going to flex his roster muscles, if I may say so, even more in the second half. But
Cam Hillis, incidentally, is back in the ECHL now. So really, I mean, really, you know, you want another positive for the season is that Cam Hillis played an NHL game this season. He played in the NHL one game.
Really a positive, though, at this point? It's a positive for him.
It's a positive for him. And he was not only that, he was on that whole road trip. He got a taste of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he was asked about his ECHL experience, and he was pretty honest about it and everything. And so, you know, but I just thought I'd mention that he is, now that Laval is starting to get some bodies back from Montreal, he's found himself back at Trois-Rivières, which Michael Pezzetta will tell you is not the end of the world. You know, you can bounce back from that, as Alex Burrows will tell you, as lots of people will tell you. So it's good to have depth.
Yeah, you can bounce back from being in ECHL, and you sure can bounce back from being in Trois-Rivières. I know, because I did it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, so if we can close that segment on prospects, maybe by bringing up what we could call, if we were to give an award to the prospect who showed the best progression, who would your pick be?
I have a suspicion that we probably think the same person, but you know, watching Ryan Poehling, really grow into someone who is comfortable in his skin at the NHL level. You know, as from the time he came back from Laval, and maybe not immediately, but eventually you just start to see him settle into the game, where not every shift was an audition. Not every shift was something where he had to make a million things happen in order for him to stay with the club. I think he's spoken very eloquently, I feel, about everything he's learned from the time he turned pro, his debut game, to now, the disappointments, the ups and downs, what was going on in his head. And I think all those things are finally gone from his head. Like, he's just accepted the fact that he's probably never going to be a star player in the NHL. There's nothing wrong with that. You could be who you are and make a very good living and have a very good career being the player that Ryan Poehling is likely to be, which is a solid two-way forward, decent skating, good size, could play a bit of a physical game, make space, goes to the tough areas of the ice, and has decent hands around the net in tight quarters. And so, you know, becoming a potentially a third line center or even a fourth line center for the Canadiens, there's a really clear path to it. Whereas I didn't see a path for Ryan Poehling as recently as 8 or 9 months ago, or maybe even 6 months ago. I didn't see a very clear path for Ryan Poehling to get from where he was to becoming a regular NHL player. But I think what we've seen from him over the last couple of months, for the first time, at least for me, I feel he's established that path. He still needs to travel that path. He still needs to go down it and has some developing left to do. Mm-hmm. But at least there's a path there, and he's on that path. He's not looking for it.
No. And I mean, if we think of Ryan Poehling at training camp, he didn't look like an NHL player one bit. And now he does. Mm-hmm. Of course, it cannot be his ceiling. He needs to improve. But yeah, as you say, there is a path. I like, even though he'll make sometimes, mistakes in reads or in back check. I remember during the recent road trip. I can't remember which game it was. But he made a mistake that on Twitter I first attributed to Arturi Lehkonen, because they made it on their back check.
Both of them went to the same guy.
It was on Poehling.
That was against Vegas.
So he made a mistake there, but I think that his intensity on the back check, and I'm not saying it in the same funny way, wink wink, as we used to talk about Jacob DeLaRose, but truly, I mean, that his defensive awareness seems to be getting better. I see more of his skating now. And even though he's not a guy that necessarily generates a lot of scoring chances, I like the work that he does down low in the offensive zone in terms of puck pressure and puck retrieval. So I think that there's promises there. That being said, if his ceiling is third line center, there's going to be an interesting decision to be made by the Canadiens when it comes to him versus Jake Evans. And I start to wonder if the Canadiens are already seeing this, and if that could be a reason why we've been seeing Jake Evans on the wing lately. Do they try to see what they could get out of Jake Evans as a winger, because they portray Ryan Poehling as the third centerman of the future for that team? Is it that they already know what they got out of Evans, and now they're just, you used the word audition regarding Poehling earlier, maybe that's what it is. But if it's not, they're both seen as potential centermen for this club, there might be a day where they're going to be competing exactly for the same spot.
I mean, maybe, but I don't think there's anything wrong with having Ryan Poehling as your third center and Jake Evans as your fourth center. I mean, I don't see why they couldn't fill the bottom six up front.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I mean, we mentioned Vaidemo before. You can move Vaidemo to the wing. Has a lot more speed than Evans does, even though Evans has greatly improved his skating since turning pro. I don't think it's an either or situation. You know, I mean, the beauty of Jake Evans is they have him signed. They have him locked in at a good number. Like, so the number that he's at, which is one and changed, around 1.5. I don't have it in front of me, but I mean, it's not a huge number.
I think it was 1.7.
1.7. Yes, that's right. Yeah. It is 1.7 for three more years. That's fourth line center money right there. I mean, that's, I don't see an issue with that. So, but yeah, I agree. And I think we'll get to it a little later, but the reason we see Jake Evans on the wing is sort of indicative of some of the decisions that have been made. But we're not talking about the negatives right now. We're getting to it. We're getting there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay? For those who just joined us, no, the Canadians are not playing for 750.
Yeah. The negatives are coming. So I think we have one more. We have one more positive to bring up, and then we're going to get to the negatives. And so the one positive I think that's important to bring up here is actually comes from a negative. You know, I mean, the Canadians got off to the start that they did. Jeff Molson, really, to my surprise, decides to fire Marc Bergevin. Not only fire Marc Bergevin, fire Trevor Timmins as well, fire Paul Wilson as well. You know, the fans probably don't really care about the firing of Paul Wilson. It doesn't really impact the product on the ice as much. But I think it showed, from Jeff Molson's point of view, to what extent he'd like the team to communicate better with their fans. Paul Wilson, for those who didn't know, was the vice president of communications for the Canadiens, not only for the Canadiens, for the whole company, the Groupe Sayash. He did Evenko. He did all sorts of other things. But specifically in the case of Marc Bergevin, the fact that he was fired him, brought in Jeff Gorton, a unilingual Anglophone from Massachusetts, to run the hockey operations department, I think took a lot of bravery. Everything we heard from Jeff Gorton when he was hired showed a vision that was in stark contrast to the way Marc Bergevin ran this team. Then he goes and hires Kent Hughes. Kent Hughes' vision is in stark contrast to what we saw from Marc Bergevin over the last 10 years. And the one thing that the one word that both men have mentioned the most is modernize. They want to modernize the Canadiens. And this has been far too long. It's been far too long where that word has not been associated with the Montreal Canadiens. Like, it's really not. The Montreal Canadiens are the word that's most often associated with them is tradition. The tradition, the history, it's all backwards facing. For once, finally, this club has two people in charge who are looking forward, who want a forward-facing thing, who want to modernize, so this to me is extremely positive. Like, this is probably more positive than anything that we have brought up so far, is the fact that the Canadians have two people in charge who say, it's important to point out, who say they want to modernize the organization, they want to use modern techniques, they're embracing analytics, they want to improve player development, all the things that have been really holding the Canadians back, they say they want to improve. Now, they still must do so. We have to see what they do. But just based on what they said, that is very, very encouraging for this organization.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I think it's refreshing. I feel like those two guys are extremely smart. They know where they're going, and they have views on how to improve the organizational aspect of it. And it's something that we don't just see in hockey, but it's, you know, in every industry, there are thoughts about how can we improve the way the division of labor is going, how the information circulates, how responsibilities are given to people. And I think that in that aspect, Kent Hughes seems to have really his mind set on making sure that the team doesn't work in silos anymore, that there is a much better understanding of everything that's going on in your organization by all parties involved, and not just the general manager, but getting the opinions and the feedback and the perspective of everybody that's going to play a role to strengthen the organization. And it's I think it's something that really needs to be done. And with, you know, nowadays there are theories out there in the marketplace regarding how to manage your people better and whatnot. There are there are new theories that could be applied to the way that a hockey team operates. And maybe that's where having people that are different background than a former player, it's the sort of thing where it could pay off, I think. So I think it's extremely encouraging, because even though it's a change that might operate first in the offices, I think that it's going to percolate into decisions that are going to impact the on-ice product and the overall performance on the team. So I think that bit is extremely encouraging. And it's not just firing Marc Bergevin. They could have named other executives to run the team that would not give that sort of impression or would not express those priorities. And I'm glad to see that this is the case with Gorton and Hughes. If I can just...
One other thing I would say about Hughes that I think is important.
Yeah.
You know, listen, he might just be saying this, but he brought it up in his introductory press conference. But what was most telling was the first game in Vegas that he went to go see. At first intermission, he was interviewed by Alain Crête on the RDS broadcast. And, you know, Alain, to his credit, did not rehash a bunch of the stuff that we heard in the intro, asked some new questions. But one of them was point blank asking him, do the standings properly reflect the quality of your team? Kent Hughes' answer was one word long. It was no. Like, he's not, and I think this is vitally important for both these guys in many respects, is not allowing the way the season has gone to overly bias or overly influence their evaluation of the players that are under contract and the players that are here. Because, so I think that's one, we've gotten that indication on a few, you know, on a few occasions from Ken Hughes, that he doesn't necessarily buy it and that he's going to take the time to properly evaluate these players. And the other important thing that he said is that it's not only good enough to say he's playing poorly, I want to know why he's playing poorly and what we can do to fix that. So I think those are qualities that are very applicable to the way this team right now, the state of this team at this moment, requires a bit of a cold, objective analysis of the actual roster, because it's not true that all of these players suddenly forgot how to play hockey, even though when you watch them play, it certainly looks that way. It's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, and I guess that's where what you just said related to what I was saying earlier about, you know, if you want to understand why certain players are not performing properly, well, if you pay attention to analytics, to sports science, to human performance, and you can blend those things to have an organization that functions at a higher level, then you're going to be better equipped to answer those questions. But okay, well, I think that this is a great segue to the more negative parts of this first half, because the Montreal Canadiens, if we are to agree that if you look at their roster, a healthy-ish roster, they're not supposed to be the 32nd team in the NHL, and I'm convinced of that because they are individually, there are some good players. Part of that falls on the head coach. We brought up, you know, systems in the past, I understand, but to me, more than systems, the head coach has to figure out a way to activate those players and make sure that they can provide some results on a nightly basis and show a commitment, a level of engagement that is a lot more regular than what we've seen in the first half of the season. And each player individually can take a part of the blame for their lack of motivation, lack of preparation, and whatnot. I mean, the diagnosis must change from one player to another. But collectively, I mean, Dominique Ducharme has not been able to, you know, to take this team that was struggling and make it improve. I feel as though every 3 weeks we would hear him say, oh, well, we're making progress. You know, lately we've been doing progress, but that progress never accumulated into anything significant, because as the character in the Greek mythology,
Sisyphus. There you go. Yes.
Yeah. So the character pushes the rock up the mountain, but he's basically forced or condemned to see the rock go back at the bottom of the mountain, and constantly he'll try to push it back until he reaches the top, and it will never happen. But I feel like that's what's happening with this team, and especially this head coach this season.
My thing with Dom is, let's just take the last game for example. Okay, Dominic Ducharme is not stupid. He saw what happened, called it like it was after the game. But he also said he liked their start. He mentioned that the first 4 or 5 minutes were good. Aside from getting two very favorable bounces and having Mike Hoffman be able to bat a bouncing puck at full force in the slot into the net, it was as random a goal. That wasn't a process goal. Okay, that was a bounce goal. Like, they got a couple of bounces that led to a good scoring chance, and good on Mike Hoffman, he finished it. But my issue with Dom this season, when he first came on board, he was clearly a guy who was focused on process, always focused on process. He has become a guy who is solely focused on results. Like, he can't look, you know, even today after practice, where, you know, he was getting a lot of midseason questions, what did you do? And, you know, he said, I felt we were building some momentum. Which brings back to your point. I think it was actually answering your question. We felt he was bringing, they were building up some momentum. They were in line to become the first NHL team since the Kansas City Scouts to give up 50 shots on goal in 3 consecutive games. It almost happened. Wasn't that far off. But yes, they collected points in 3 straight games, which has only happened once before this season. And they still have not won consecutive games this season. But to look at those 3 games and say that you're building momentum, to me, is completely ignoring process to an egregious level. Like, you're really not paying attention to how your team is playing. To be able to say that it's normal to give up 23 shots in the first period, or to give up 50 in Dallas and 53 or 51 in, you know, 50 in regulation in Vegas, and say that you're building momentum is not objectively true or realistic. It's just burying your head in the sand. And it's not even
seeing the glass half full. It's seeing that there is something in the glass and making it half full.
Yes. Seeing that there's a drop of water in the glass and calling it half full. So, and listen, this doesn't only stem from this recent 4-game stretch. This is something that Dom's been doing all season. And to me, you know, we mentioned earlier Jake Evans playing on the wing. God knows why he's playing on the wing. It's not as if there are not other people who could play on the wing instead of Jake Evans. And really, yes, he can play the wing. There's no reason why he should play the wing. I think, you know, it was just another short-sighted decision that Dominic Ducharme had made. And I think Dominic Ducharme's lack of perspective is personified really in one player. And to me, it's Cedric Paquette. Cedric Paquette, for whatever reason, Dominic Ducharme seems to think that he's going to help him win hockey games. He was brought in to be a good faceoff guy, fourth line center, physical presence, penalty killer. He's not good on faceoffs. Really not all that physical, although he does bring some of that. He does have some of that in his game. Not a particularly good skater. In my mind, not a particularly good penalty killer. So why he would be playing over someone like Lucas Vedamo, for instance, that we brought up earlier, it just makes no sense from an organizational standpoint. And I think Jeff Gorton has kind of left Dominic Ducharme alone to make his own decisions and to manage everything he has to manage lineup-wise and roster-wise, and give him that autonomy to make his own decisions and, you know, meanwhile evaluating what he has in a coach. But it just, there's been a lot of unforced errors that Dominic Ducharme has made this season that took a bad situation and made it worse. And, you know, I mean, I think there could have been a lot more benefit out of this situation for the Canadians had Dominic Ducharme kind of bought into the notion that this season is lost. Might as well play some players in roles that we might see them in next season, or just make lineup decisions based on that. But he never really got around to that. He never, because I think in his mind, he's coaching for his NHL career, and in his mind, he needs to win games, as many games as possible, in order to either keep this job or get another job in the NHL. And the irony of that is, in attempting to do that, he's actually making losing more likely based on those decisions that he's trying to make in order to win.
Yeah, regarding Cedric Paquette, I really feel as though they're playing him as though he was the player he was 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, because who he was in Tampa is not who he is now. And who he is now, he's not going to get any better.
It's not even who he was last season. Or really, it wasn't. But
I mean, he arrived in Montreal, you know, talking about a bounce back season because it had been complicated, you know, changing teams in the midst of a shortened season with COVID and et cetera, et cetera. It's been difficult for him. And he was scratched also numerous times. But you have to go back. And, you know, he's had so many health issues over the years that he's also a banged up player. So he was a lot more effective once upon a time in Tampa on the PK. He was a lot more physical. And he was also a faster skater. All those three items that you pointed out earlier, I think, and what determined his identity as a player are gone at this point. So when you choose to play him and scratch Vaidemo, when you choose to play Romanov the least amount of minutes among all your defensemen as he did in Vegas, and your younger players like Paling and Pezzetta are the two forwards that play the least, mm-hmm. when you have guys that are not necessarily prospects at the same level, play more minutes, well, that leads us to think that yes, he coaches to win on that particular night, and that there is not necessarily there a symbiosis between his short-term interest to his short-term focus on winning games right now, which, let's face it, it's still the focus of any NHL coach, but a guy who feels like the rug is slipping under the ground is slipping under him, it might be even more true, but that is not necessarily compatible with a team that tries to identify how they can renew themselves with their younger players and how they can use the current season to maybe provide some experience from some of those prospects. There's a disconnection there.
No, 100%. So, I mean, and honestly, he's one of the bigger disappointments on this team. I mean, I really did think more highly of him than a lot of the fan base did last season. I think, I gave him a lot more credit than a lot of the fans did, but he hasn't lived up to my own expectations as far as his ability to not only coach, not only a tactical coach, but just identifying trends in players, identifying who's going and who's not, the way he doles out ice time. I mean, I just looked up the Colorado game. Romanov played 1350 in Colorado. Why? It's hard to come up with a reason, but the main reason why is because the Canadiens were in that game. They were competitive. And so, you know, he rode the guys that he thought would get him a win, and Romanov wasn't one of those guys. And that's a problem. You know, it's really an issue. And when you look at the fact that Jeff Petrie in that same game played played just over 21 minutes, which is still less than Sherratt and Savard, but still, and you know, he didn't necessarily play all that poorly in that game, but still it's Jeff Petrie is the next item on our disappointment list.
Oh my,
I have rarely witnessed a player fall off a cliff to the extent that Jeff Petrie has this season. And listen, it's an easy answer to say, oh, well, he's getting up in years. This is obviously age catching up to him. No, it's not, because his legs are still moving. He can still skate. He's got all the skills he had before. What's deteriorated is his brain, is his hockey mind, which as you get older as a defenseman is actually supposed to improve. It actually compensates for all the other areas of your game that tend to deteriorate when you hit your mid-30s. Jeff Petrie's decision-making suddenly, which was never like his number one strength, let's get that clear, but it had improved to a point where it was no longer a glaring weakness. Well, it is again. All of a sudden, he's back to what he was in his mid-20s, you know, or, you know, mid to late 20s when he just made a countless numbers of really mindless errors. And he's right back there. And I have trouble explaining it. You know, I can't listen. We don't know everything that's going on in Jeff Petrie's life. Maybe there are factors that we're not aware of that lead to this, but that would explain like a slump. That would explain someone going through that for like 4 or 5, 6 games. Maybe that something's going on in his life. He's distracted all season, literally all season. I've rarely seen this from a player of his quality to go from where he was at to where he is now. Not only now, where he was at the beginning of this, right from the beginning of the season. I can't remember a player of his caliber dropping that drastically so quickly as Jeff Petrie has this season.
No, me neither. And clearly it's something mental. And you say, well, he's back to where he was in his mid-20s. Was he really that bad in Edmonton? I mean, we heard that you know, he had some issues. And I remember people telling me during back when the Canadiens first signed him to you know, to an extension to make sure that he wouldn't walk as a UFA. Are you kidding me? The Canadiens are giving him that much money, etc., based on what he had done in Edmonton. But if he had played in Edmonton consistently the way that he's playing this season, the Canadiens would not even bother to give up a second round pick for him.
No.
And at this point, that's hurting his value. Because he's going to be, I must think that he's going to be a trade chip for the Canadiens. But at that price, with still, 3 more years at $6.25 million, for a player of that's showing that sort of hockey now, it's impossible to lose a trade. You know, you can't get any return for a guy like this. The Canadiens need for him to figure things out. And let's hope that it's going to happen at some point in the second half of the season. I suspect that the sanitary measures in Quebec is something that has weighed pretty heavily in his family. It's not every day that you see a wife and kids going back and staying back away from the hockey player when they've been established in a city for so long. But that's the decision that the Petrie family has made, to stay back in Michigan after Christmas. So he's going to spend the rest of the year in his big house all by himself. Not sure to which extent it's healthy, but it must, obviously it's been something that's been a problematic aspect of his, of his off-ice life. Just the stress surrounding, you know, the family and the sanitary measures. So I don't know where this is all going to go. I hope that it's going to help him maybe clear his mind, but he might as also be constantly focused on hockey and keep spiraling down. But, this is the sort of situation where, you know, you remember when Jeff Molson said, when Marc Bergevin was fired, that he intended to establish, new resources within the organization to help players dealing better with pressure, with any mental issues that they might have. Well, if those resources were already in place, I mean, they would greatly benefit Jeff Petrie, because it's clearly not physical with him. So, yeah.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey there!
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. No, it's, I think there's a lot of things going on there, but it's, you know, and obviously not having Joel Edmondson around, I think was another thing, but it's also, I think Jeff.
Not having Shea Weber.
Exactly. But he has to own it. Like all those are factors. Everything that's been mentioned, the family situation, Edmondson, Weber, the way the season has gone overall, but you know, ultimately this comes down to Jeff Petrie. Final thing, I think, and I think this is kind of a greater point, a more global point than anything else. But you know, the Canadiens' inability to find some degree of shelter for Nick Suzuki has been sort of an ongoing issue all season. And if there's one thing the Canadiens need to get out of this season, because let's be honest, when the season began, not many people had them as a playoff team. I certainly thought they would not be terrible. I thought they would be competing for a playoff spot. I was obviously extremely wrong about that. But what they needed more than that was to see progression in Nick Suzuki, was to have Cole Caulfield have a solid rookie season, progression in Romanov, and just start seeing these young core pieces take another step. And I just feel Suzuki's season has been overly burdened with very difficult minutes. And it's those are minutes that you would expect Nick Suzuki to have to take at some point in his career, probably very soon. But to have them all dumped on him right away, I think it's been a hindrance to him. And I think also Nick Suzuki needs to own his own lulls in this season. He's gone through multiple longish stretches where he's just not a factor, and he's got to figure out why that's happening. But I also do feel like this is something that I think the Canadiens hoped Christian Dvorak would be able to provide in terms of being that layer of shelter for Nick Suzuki. It just hasn't worked out that way, partially because Dvorak wasn't that good after like the first month of the season. Then he got hurt. All sorts of factors led to the fact, and you know, I asked Dominique Ducharme about this after practice today. And what was the line? There's things I wish, and there's things I have to worry about what I wish and what I can.
Yeah.
There's what I wish and what I can do. And, you know, really kind of said it all. But it's unfortunate, I feel. And this is, we're going to see over this stretch of home games what Dominique Ducharme can do as opposed to what he wishes he can do. Because with the last change, essentially for the next month, it would be nice to see him get Nick Suzuki some easier minutes to see if that's a reason why he's gone into these extended stretches where he's just a non-factor.
Yeah. And I mean, the matchups have been terrible for him this season. You look at just 5-on-5, the players that he played the most since the beginning of the season. And I go down the list of the forwards because obviously the goalies will be the ones that he faced the most. But just among forwards, Landeskog, Crosby, Kasperi Kapanen, Patrick Kane, Nathan MacKinnon. My goodness, there's okay, Mathieu Joseph, that's not too good. Alex, it's not too bad. Alex DeBrincat. But you see, those guys, clearly there's been some very tough matchups that he faced. And, you know, he had to be ready for it because it was clear right from the get-go that he would be the first-line center of this team. But you mentioned Christian Dvorak. Either he was hurt, or he was not playing up to expectations. And if you have a young centerman who's not a top flight first line center. Suzuki, I think, is a borderline number one centerman. But if you have a borderline number one centerman, you need to have a good number two centerman. And Dvorak has been more a third centerman. And the kids we mentioned, Evans, Paling, are not guys that are able to step up and be, you know, a second line center either. So I think that organizationally, it has really hampered the team. It has hampered Suzuki and his line mates too. Cole Caulfield, I think that here's another guy who's been struggling this season. And I think that those matchups, those difficult minutes, the fact that he would spend entire shifts stuck in his own end, and just the second that the puck finally comes out, he's exhausted and he has to go back to the bench without having produced anything offensively. It has happened on numerous occasions. And I remember that we had a discussion in the beginning of the season and we did not quite agree back then. But my point was that I thought that everything was given so easily to Caulfield at the beginning of the season, right from the beginning of training camp. Whereas a guy like Brendan Gallagher, who's been, you know, who's been giving his all to the Canadiens for years and years, must have thought, wait a minute. I mean, I gave my blood to this team, and all of a sudden I'm being asked to play third line minutes instead of this kid who just arrived and he's got prime real estate right from the get go. It turned out to be too big of an ask for Caulfield, and I think that if the team had been healthier, he would have spent a majority of the season in Laval at this point. And who knows, Gallagher, things could have gone differently if he had been given a bigger role next to Suzuki. So, I mean, this is hindsight 2020, but I think that this whole sheltering the first line or making things at least a little bit easier for them has affected Suzuki, but has also affected Caulfield and maybe to a certain extent Toffoli too.
You know who's supposed to be a really good second line center? Shane Wright. Shane Wright sounds like he's going to be a really good second line center in the NHL. Used to be a really good first line center that people thought he would be, but now it's sounding like he'll be a really good second line center. But ultimately,
yeah, I feel like we're talking about Nico Ehlers here.
Suzuki Shane Wright up down the middle. Yeah, it might be. Who knows? I mean, you know, he's not had a great season, but you know, if you have Suzuki and Shane Wright down the middle, 1-2. Could be worse. It's not exactly the superstar that the Canadiens would hope to get at number one overall, if indeed they wind up picking number one overall for the first time since 1980. Is that right?
Yeah.
Doug Wickenheiser was 1980. So
yes, sir.
Let's hope Shane Wright is not Doug Wickenheiser, basically. God rest his soul. But yeah, so listen, let's see where this is all going. You know, it has been great halfway through the season. An optimist would say, well, can only get better from here. Whereas a realist would probably say, well, probably not, buddy, because a lot of the things that I think we mentioned today are still things. But they're, you know, let me ask you just to finish this off, because I think this is a big philosophical question the Canadiens are facing. It's pretty clear that Jeff Gorton is fine finishing last overall. Pretty clear the players and the coaches don't want that. Mm-hmm. Considering that it is always possible that somehow Jeff Petrie finds this, like all the things that we've mentioned as negatives, maybe it is. Maybe it is that it can only go up. Maybe it is that they've hit rock bottom and that they'll start to play better. Who knows? Doesn't seem like that to me, but it's possible. So the question I ask in closing to you, do you think it is more important for the Canadiens to have the best odds at the number one pick? Or is it more important for the Canadiens to show some sign of life, to give some sort of a winning environment and some semblance of culture to this team over the second half of the season and actually win some games?
Okay, I would say neither, but let's mention culture quickly. I think that the Canadiens thought they had a great culture last season. Look how quickly it has vanished. I think that if it's still there, it can be reignited with a new perspective, but I think it's most likely to happen next year. They could individually, they can figure out better habits, try to do all the positive thinking that Jake Allen was mentioning when they came out of their little break there. If they can manage to do that, that's great. To me, that's not the priority because A, there's going to be a lot of guys that might not be there next season. The coaching staff might be different and management will get involved in influencing the core values of that culture. Tanking, getting the number one pick. I think that it's less crucial that they get number one because the gap has been closing between Shane Wright and the other better candidates in that draft. I think that the Canadians are most likely to draft in the top five, and that's a good spot for them. But I think what's most important, the priority should be to make sure that they maximize the value of each of their assets in different ways. Can't use quoted Ron Hextall by saying that unfortunately teams were in the business of buying high and selling low, and Kent Hughes wants to avoid that. Well, I think that he has to evaluate how he can improve the market value of a lot of his players and figure out when would be the best time to use that value. It's not the same timing for everybody, but for example, if he feels as though there's a bidding war coming for Bencherot, I think that you could kill two birds in one stone by saying, well, we're going to pull the trigger sooner rather than later on Bencherot because his value is still high. We know that he hasn't been hurt. He's healthy, knock on wood. And at the same time, if we move him for future assets, then we're helping our chances in the standings for and our odds to draft number one. For other guys, you keep playing Petrie, but you play him not to trade him now, but in the process that maybe next season he might have regained some of its value. Let him at least finish on a higher note. Same thing for guys like Armia. Same thing for guys like Toffoli or Gallagher or a number of players for that matter. So to me, it's really trying to find a way or individual cases to maximize the value of their players.
Yeah, sounds good to me. And also the fact that the team that finishes last almost never wins the draft lottery. So just keep that in mind, everyone. If this team starts winning games, which I think they might, I really do. But I've been saying that for so long that it's starting to sound yeah. a bit ridiculous. But if it happens, don't freak out because the team that finishes last almost never wins the draft lottery. I think it's happened twice in the last 11 years, if I'm not mistaken. Last season, the Sabres wound up with the number one pick only because the Kraken weren't allowed to pick number one, but they actually won the lottery.
The team that finished 30, second to last, earned the number one spot
three times. Yes. Yeah. So yeah. It's called the lottery for a reason, everyone. The NHL has done everything in its power to discourage teams from purposely finishing last. Didn't stop the Arizona Coyotes from doing it. If I'm the Canadians, I'm letting the Coyotes finish last overall by winning some games because history has shown that you are less likely to get the number one overall pick by doing so. And I think for this group, especially for some of the players we mentioned, starting with Nick Suzuki, starting with Cole Caulfield, all the younger guys, I think winning some games, stringing together some wins, having a good feeling when they get to the rink, feeling some confidence is important. You can't go through an entire season of just pure, unmitigated misery constantly. Yeah. Like you can't, it's not healthy. So yeah. I think it's important for this team to win some games. And if that costs them a few percentage points in lottery odds, so be it. And I agree with you, Marc-Antoine. It's less important now that Shane Wright has brought himself back to the pack so that picking third, fourth would not be the disaster it could have been perceived as earlier in the season. One thing I want to mention to everyone before we go is that if you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, please, please, please leave a review if you feel so inclined. Leave a rating if you feel so inclined. I don't care if you leave a bad rating, leave a good reading, whatever you like. If you're asking for my suggestion, I would say leave a good rating or a good review, but I leave it up to you. But any review you add helps more people find this podcast. So if you like it or if you don't, give us a review, give us a rating. It's always appreciated. We do go check them. So we will read them. If you want to share some criticism, go ahead. If you want to give us a compliment, that's always appreciated. But please leave a rating wherever you're listening to this podcast, and that way more people can find it and either enjoy or despise, depending on your point of view, what we do here on this podcast.
That's great. I was just about to say the same thing. So thanks for taking care of that.
There you go. That's called chemistry, buddy. That's called podcasting chemistry.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us this week. We'll be back next week with Le Spa Athletique in French. In the meantime, don't forget to go read Arpin's articles and mine and Julian McKenzie's and everybody else from the NHL bunch at theathletic.com. So take care and we'll talk again. Bye-bye.